Hi, Alvaro. Welcome back.
Hey, hello, Adam. Thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah, and I watched your live show about Stagres. So the first time, there is something to see, not only to hear. It was at Quarkus Insights episode. And
yes,
I have to find it. This was a recent one. It was in February. Quarkus Insights.
Yes.
And we know the name.
It was about Stagres itself. I think it's 237.
What is Stagres? 237. 237.
Yep. 237. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And okay. And what you did is you presented live the Quarkus in native image as Kubernetes orchestrator.
Exactly, as a Kubernetes operator, right? So we use the Stagres just to fill in everybody here in the audience. Is basically a platform for running Postgres anywhere you want, where you have some Kubernetes or OpenShift, right? And and the cool thing is that it's technically a Kubernetes operator, but it's all written in Java, powered by Quarkus. Actually, it's split into a few Quarkus projects. And they're all compiled to native thanks to Quarkus and GraalVM, of course, and distributed native binaries. So the end user just sees a binary container with a binary there, which performs as the operator. And during this Quarkus Insights episode 237, I was with my colleague, Matteo, one of the main creators of Stagres and programmers of Stagres, the lead technical person for it. And he also performed some live demos, which, of course, had some small nuances, but they were fixed live, so it was pretty cool.
There's actually no problem at all. He just confused the IP addresses.
Yep.
This is absolutely fine. I mean, this is okay. This is,
and then we had
it's even better because you
YAML.
See that it's live, you know?
Yeah. And then we had also a typo on a YAML that was typed live. So it was not anything with the software related, but just, you know.
Yeah, you have to practice alpha next time, right?
So exactly, exactly.
Okay, but today is a highly focused episode on DB. This was the plan.
That's the plan.
Maybe before we start with the highly focused part, there was a question comparing CNPG to Stagres.
Yes.
And what is CNPG and what's the difference to Stagres once again? Maybe this will be also interesting for our listeners.
Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of operators actually conceptually similar to Stagres. Again, an operator, it's basically a specialized software that helps you run, in this case, Postgres on Kubernetes. Probably one of the most popular also is Cloud Native PG. That's CNPG, Cloud Native PG. It's a project by a company called Enterprise DB. And so, I mean, there's plenty of differences. There's different architectural choices. For me, the most relevant is that in Stagres, we decided to pick the most well-known, trusted, and deployed solution for high availability, which is obviously one of the most critical parts of the software, which is Patroni. So Stagres and all other operators use Patroni. CNPG decided to go with nothing, quote, nothing, which means, no, Kubernetes is enough for HA. I have a different opinion from a technical perspective.
But how is this possible just to use... So for me, it's not even... So I mean, without... Yeah, how you could do this just with Kubernetes without nothing? I mean...
Well, I mean, technically, Kubernetes behind the scenes has etcd, which is distributed consensus store, DCS, right? And you could leverage this to actually trigger a primary, secondary election. But but actually, there's been a recent issue on CNPG claiming that there is a split brain risk. I mean, and a split brain is the worst thing you can happen on a database, right? It's basically...
Yeah, you have two databases.
You have two databases, which are supposed to be the same, and some users write on one, some users write on the other one, and then you need to reconcile that manually, which is a huge pain in the best case. Right?
Or impossible case, sometimes.
You lose, impossible, or you essentially had to drop some data and you lose data. So it's a big thing. And I believe architecturally, the only way to solve this is to use a tool like Patroni. And so
but this is interesting because in order to use etcd for to preventing something like split brain, you will need to make etcd kind of transactional. Otherwise,
etcd is technically transactional, right? So that's that's the beauty of it, and it's exposed through Kubernetes API. It's not also you don't consume it directly; you expose it through Kubernetes API. But basically, my take on this is that there's there's a couple of things in IT that you shouldn't do by yourself. You shouldn't create your own solution by yourself, unless you are really an expert on this area and you're investigating new algorithms and you have like a very innovative idea. And basically, those two fields are distributed systems and cryptography. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, unless you're a super expert in cryptography and come up with a new idea of a new algorithm, then yes, of course, you should do that. You should use some existing cryptography packages. The same happens with high availability and distributed systems. And in my opinion, that's the way to go, right? And if you try to roll your own algorithm for HA, based on etcd, which technically is transactional in a distributed fashion, but still mm-hmm. the algorithm is yours. You're using that as a building block, but the algorithm is yours. Then you can face problems. And the problem with distributed systems is that in most cases, things work well until you're unlucky. And we prefer not to risk, and especially in a database, to be unlucky. So we want to make sure and we ensure that in Stagres there's no risk for split brains.
Yeah. The interesting part, to give you an example, of a couple of years ago, more than 10, I was in a project when every 3 months the data became stale. And what happened was, it turned out that there was a very special night where two jobs run at the same time, and this caused a problem. Mm. But only then,
exactly.
And they had something to do with transactions. So this is really a hard problems to fix. But I'm just curious. So Patroni versus plain etcd, what algorithms we are talking about? Is like one is master and the other is follower, like the leader follower, or what happens behind the scenes? You know, why we need an algorithm at all? This is just interesting.
Yeah, so definitely you need an algorithm. Basically, mm-hmm. what Patroni does, which again mm-hmm. is the most used and deployed HA tool in the Postgres world, right? Battle mm-hmm. test for so many years. Mm-hmm. What Patroni does is, it does a lot of things. And Postgres is a primary replicas architecture, so there's only a single writable instance. Mm-hmm. So this instance, what it does, and actually Patroni uses etcd behind the scenes, but Patroni has mm-hmm. A complex algorithm and a lot of battle-proven cases tested in production to understand what it needs to be done. But basically, the primary needs to acquire a leader lock. It's called a leader lock. And mm-hmm. it holds this lock for 10 seconds. And every 10 seconds or less needs to apply to renew it. This is done mm-hmm. through etcd. And if the primary cannot renew the least lock or the leader lock, then it expires. And then it triggers an election. Again, etcd is used for the other nodes to compete to know which one is going to be the primary. And then there's complex logic there because, for example, if you're using a synchronous replication in Postgres, the replicas may be at different distances from the primary, and you want to elect, obviously, the most recent one, the one that contains mm-hmm. the most data. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, there's quite a lot of logic. Then there's a lot of circumstances where you may have partial partitions or partitions that shift over time. Node 2 can talk to node 3, but then the next point, half a second later, node 2 cannot talk to node 3, but rather can talk to node 1, and then node 3 can talk to node 4. Like, there's a lot of circumstances, and this is what proven algorithms solve already. And the that's the approach followed by Stagres. So mm-hmm. it's actually a bit surprising.
I get it. This is actually what Zalando did before, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
Zalando.
Okay. So this is just the Postgres clustering algorithm that we are talking about. I thought there's something more. What happened? Okay. And this was already interesting because years ago, it was, I think, before Corona time or something like this, we evaluated the Zalando and exactly what you talk about. So there were also cases where we could lose some data between, so there was not, you know, there was always some windows, there was some critical, I actually forgot, it's a long time ago, but, and of course, it's very similar to two-phase transactions, is you have very similar problems in such environments as well.
Yeah, so Postgres actually supports three replication ways. You can use async replication, which by its nature is async, and therefore there could be a delay, and you could lose data mm-hmm. if you promote mm-hmm. an async replica. Synchronous mm-hmm. replication, where there's almost a strict warranty that you will never lose any data, whatever happens, mm-hmm. but then mm-hmm. it's subject to latency problems. And your mm-hmm. cluster may be much slower, so not most people do not use synchronous. And then there is a midway in between called semi-synchronous or group replication, where you wait until a few nodes have reached the replication stream. It's not pure consensus algorithm.
Quorum.
Yeah, or Quorum algorithm. If you use a tool, again, if you use a tool like Patroni, which behind the scenes uses CTCD or other DCSs, which actually enforces warranties, then you have much stronger warranties. So most people with serious environments where they don't want to lose data, they use Quorum or semi-synchronous replication. But if you're only on async, then yes, there is a risk of data loss. Typically, it's anyway close to zero because the replication lag on a properly tuned system is sub-second. And so you typically don't lose anything. But the best way to go is semi-sync.
And you can pick in Stagres, which replication would you like to have? Or you... Okay.
Oh, Stagres is super flexible. You can pick any of these three methods. You could set up cascading replication, which means you have a group of nodes and then another cascading from that one and replicating from that one. This could be even on a different data center and even on a different Kubernetes cluster for cross-region replication. You can create groups of replication like in a tree shape within your own cluster so that you can set up different nodes, different replicas for different purposes. For example, replicas for high availability, replicas for reporting, replicas for other kind of workloads. It's extremely flexible on top of this, yes.
Okay, and what's your... But there is a conventional setup because what we already discussed, you are shipping with best practices or so what's the default?
Usually, most people tend to create a three or four nodes cluster, typically three node cluster, with Quorum replication, with semi-synchronous replication. Yeah. It's basically, you're right to two out of three.
Uh-huh.
And
but
then
you're
maybe cascading to other data center.
I would say it would be a huge effort to build it by yourself. Now I understand, you know.
Oh,
I mean,
huge
if you
effort.
Would like to... this is... Imagine just the tests. You need, you know, timing tests, stress tests, and everything. This is almost mission impossible for a small company. So, I mean, it is possible, but you will have to focus on this the entire time, actually. This is what you should do and have, you know, test suite. So I would say it would be a completely different product if you do it right.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then factory.
So now I understood it. Okay.
Everything else that it brings on the table, like also automatic backups, automatic monitoring, a web UI, a REST API, sharding, it's also included, hundreds of extensions. Stagres is 250,000 lines of code, Java code. That's not nothing, right? So
But there would be the algorithm would come on top of that, right? So there would be completely different. Okay. Now I understood. So interesting choice. I can only imagine licensing compatibility or something like this because, to do something like this from scratch is huge effort.
It is.
Yeah. And if we had problem in projects, is always because of two-phase commit, distributed systems, timeout. Timeout is always interesting, you know. Even in two-phase commit, if one resource doesn't answer, what do you do then? Can you assume that it's not done? You cannot say anything, actually.
Actually, one of the biggest problems with 2PC is actually the false positive. It's basically when you prepare the transaction first and the nodes receive it, you're good, and then you say, fine, go and commit. And then the nodes commit, but then you don't know because that message of, yes, I committed, is lost. And then you have to have a mechanism to probe whether the operation was successful after a given timeout because you didn't hear back from a particular node.
And this is why you get the heuristic exceptions. And the heuristic exceptions were widely ignored in Java projects. Okay, this is just no heuristic. I don't care. And then it was, this is one project. So this is why I was so interested in the Patroni and consensus case because wanted to deeper understand what's going on. But now I got it. And right choice. Just pick one which works. And otherwise, I mean, this would be crazy to implement. If you will implement it by yourself, I mean, this would be... not very good for the product, right?
Yeah.
Because if someone looks at the code, it's okay, what's that? Why you did it? It's exactly if we would replace, in Quarkus, the transaction monitor, we say, okay, we build our own transaction management in Quarkus. This also will require some explanations, I would say, in projects at least. So I will ask in my code reviews why you did it. There should be an easy answer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Pretty cool. So now this was my question regarding the 237 episode of Quarkus Insights. And what is OnDB?
So, I'll try to make it the long answer short. But first of all, OnDB means own your database. And conceptually, what we're trying to do first of all, it's a new project from our company, from Ongress. It's going to be open source. It's not published yet, but it's going to be soon. And so our idea is that we went back to the whiteboard a little bit, and we were reflecting on why people pick Postgres, why Postgres is so popular, why people want Postgres. And there's plenty of reasons, but one of them is it's open source. It means you can inspect everything. You can see how it works. You can connect to your server and you can do anything you want there. And you can install extensions and you can install your own tools. And when you need to troubleshoot a problem, you can install your, you know, anything that you need, GDB and debug Postgres, right? We need to sometimes do this with customers. And so if you look at managed services, which have already a significant presence in the market, even though most of our customers still run on-prem, there are large companies who run a lot of workloads on-prem. But if you look at the cloud landscape, we've got managed services, which all of them offer great Postgres options, nothing against. But you lost control. You can no longer connect to that server. You cannot inspect how it is. You don't even have access to the source code anymore. They are proprietary forks of Postgres, some of them closer to the original source code, some more distant. But in reality, you still don't. You cannot even check your backups. You know, rule number one of backups, test the backup. Well, we cannot. In managed services, we cannot test our backups, our data. Yeah, we need to trust that it's there and they work, and they do, right? But we cannot. So we've lost a bit this touch with our very original reasons why we want Postgres and open source. And we want to bring back this idea that it's our environment, our data, our sovereignty, and we can exercise that. But on the other hand, people want the flexibility and the extreme easy of use of managed cloud services. I want to click, 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 and boom, get a Postgres cluster up and running production quality, right? This is what we have done in Postgres, but it's specific for Kubernetes platforms. So we want the convenience of cloud managed services with the concept that you can run anywhere you want, on your own rules, on your own servers. You can inspect everything. So we want to both unite the worlds of the classical self-hosting, where you did everything by hand, it was painful, but you controlled everything, to the world of the conveniency of cloud services, where everything is automated and production quality and packaged and everything.
But in Postgres, the Postgres is still open source. This is not unmodified Postgres. Unmodified. So you already achieved the goal with Postgres already, right?
Exactly.
The only problem is you have Kubernetes.
Exactly. You nailed it. So Postgres fulfills this vision completely. You can run Postgres anywhere you want, cloud, on-prem, anywhere. You have full control, pure Postgres, vanilla Postgres. You can inspect everything. You can install your own tools. It just requires Kubernetes. And this is a great thing.
But you could also test backups. You could do whatever you said. Yes. It is possible with Postgres. Okay. Because I got the impression that this is like proprietary, which is not possible. It's, everything is possible.
Everything is possible.
On top of. Okay.
Look, when I talk to a lot of people and people say, oh, I want to use RDS, right? Because Amazon manages it for me. It's like, yes, RDS is a great service. It is. But do you think there is some Amazon employee managing your server? No. It's obviously software. That software, they were pioneers and they created this software 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago already. But today, 2026, this software already exists. It's a commodity and it's open source. You can just use it. So absolutely, Postgres fulfills this vision. You can go, and even if you're like a UI person, you can go click, click, click and get a Postgres cluster in literally seconds. And it's production quality, right? Of course, you can also automate with CI/CD pipelines, with GitOps and all that. But you said it very well. It requires Kubernetes. And we love Kubernetes. We have participated in DOK data on Kubernetes community. We have promoted the use of databases on Kubernetes. And you know what? This is like the electric car. People either love it or hate it. There's no middle ground, or at least there's a lot of people who don't want this or don't want this right away. So a lot of people do not want to run databases on Kubernetes. So again, because we came back to this whiteboard and redesigned everything, we were thinking, is there a way where we could use the Postgres experience without Kubernetes? Can we remove Kubernetes out of the equation? The original, the first answer was no, this is impossible. Kubernetes actually provides us a great starting point because it kind of virtualizes the infrastructure. We had experience in the past that every infrastructure is different, but Kubernetes virtualizes it behind an API. So apparently,
I thought about Kubernetes and about my opinion about Kubernetes because and I think what happened is it's exactly the same as enterprise software. So enterprise software and Kubernetes attracted very specific kind of developers sometimes. And in enterprise software, what I saw, there were kind of developers, and there was a stereotype who really loved, you know, the patents on abstractions and just, you know, writing software and be like future-proof and everything is replaceable, but there were no real requirements. So they produce a lot of code without any added business value. And similar story in Kubernetes. I was in project where, you know, they spent hours with YAMLs and generating YAMLs or whatever, and at the end of the day, it didn't matter because the same project could be run on Docker in one node and no one cared.
Yes.
And the problem is both were so convincing that I saw, you know, a huge efforts with Kubernetes. So in one project, we talk about serverless, and they told me, okay, they don't care about cost savings because they have an entire department who cares about Kubernetes. So, okay, this is strange. But and this is why, so Kubernetes is actually great technology if you would write, have to your own cloud, and you have to have one. And I already thought, you know, about having a small cloud for me in my basement as well. Kubernetes, no time, but I will also implement it locally. But in most cases, for most projects, Kubernetes doesn't make any sense, especially not if you already have a real cloud like Azure or AWS or whatever you have. And this is the problem because it attracts developers who love to fiddle with YAML and forget about business logic. You know, this is and the same was true, and not in just to the same was true with Java E and before that with XML. I remember XML came out, so that and someone convinced a company to store this you will love the story. There's a book, Java and XML, Java 1 2000. And after that, short after that, a client called me. There was actually an insurance. And they told me that they store now in DB2 XML. And I say, yeah, why you do this? And if you think this is crazy, because the table has already the metadata, right? So there is a name and there's a type. And they store it in this XML once again. And the funny story is, a few months later, they had to buy a new hardware again because, you know, the database exploded. And if I ask, you know, why XML, the answer was, yeah, because of XML. Actually, there was no answer. They just wanted to have it. And the same problem is with Kubernetes. So if you are reasonable, Kubernetes is way to go. But if you don't need Kubernetes, don't use it, right? This is what, how,
yes,
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So Kubernetes is definitely not the universal solution for everything, as some people like to paint it. And as usual, right, your use case varies, your mileage may vary. So there is use cases for Kubernetes and uses for not Kubernetes. So we wanted to cover both grounds where we were only covering one. And we found a way. We found a way. And it's a pattern that I'll blog about it one day. But it's what I call Kubernetes without Kubernetes. Or basically chopping off the head of Kubernetes. Sorry about
Kubeless.
That. yeah. Well, that's a good name. Kubeless. Like it. I like it. I may borrow it if you don't mind.
Yay, you have it.
So the idea is actually pretty simple. Kubernetes is actually two things in one. It's a distributed orchestrator. It's something that allocates resources for your workloads. You say, I want to run these workloads. Kubernetes is like, fine. Whole movie year, right? And I'll do this for you. And finds a node or nodes or whatever and creates everything and deploys the workload. So it decides. But the other part is at the end of the day, Kubernetes is going to decide, okay, this thing is going to run on node A and this thing is going to run on node M, whatever, right? And then it calls to a component within node A and node M to schedule some containers. So we thought, what if we remove the first part, the orchestrator, and just go directly to a node and say, hey, I want to run a container here. And the software component that essentially runs this on almost all Kubernetes clusters today is called Containerd, which is an API programmable container runtime. So it's something you talk via an API and run containers. Actually, this is what Docker does as of today. Docker is, quote, don't get me wrong, nothing against, it's kind of a shim layer on top of Containerd. It has its own own API, which is the commands we're used to Docker. But then Docker talks to Containerd. Actually, it's Docker client talks to Docker server, and Docker server talks to Containerd, which containerd creates the containers, which is actually, mm-hmm. by the way, not directly run something like called runc, and then runc actually runs the containers. It's a bit of a long chain. But at the end of the day, what matters is that there is a component that is programmable and can run containers. So this is the part that we kept. So mm-hmm. OnDB is basically many things at once. We can go on that. But the main component, the main idea is that I have a binary which unsurprisingly is written in Java with Quarkus compiled down to a native binary command line, which talks to containerd via its API. Actually, it uses the same API as Kubernetes. Containerd has two APIs, CRI, which is a standard Kubernetes API, and its own, let's say, proprietary API. We use Kubernetes one. So we create pods without Kubernetes just by having our own self-contained binary that actually also contains the installation, contains also containerd. So you download basically the experience is that you download the binary, mm-hmm. self-contained, is a basically curl pipe shell pattern. And then you have a command line. And this command line says, create a Postgres cluster here. Boom. And you get it. Done. And you start from an empty Linux VM. No Docker required. No Kubernetes required. Nothing. Just...
Why no Docker? But how you get the containerd?
It's embedded within our installation. And actually, make it run on a path that will not conflict with... Even if you're running containerd because you're running Docker or something else, it's like a semi-random path in... It will not conflict with anything. It talks over Unix domain sockets. It doesn't use a port, so you don't feel it.
So it will ship containerd with your distribution.
Yes, that is correct.
Mm-hmm. Precisely and, to make this so experience. It will be Kubernetes seamless. Also without etcd, right?
Yes, etcd is not required either.
So it will be like actually just containerd. So there will
it
be
is
no
containerd plus our mm-hmm. own DB CLI, which embeds mm-hmm. and talks to containerd.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
That's simple. Mm-hmm. So it's basically containerd daemon for our use case and the OnDB daemon mm-hmm. and the OnDB CLI, which interacts to our daemon that talks to containerd that manages the clusters.
Why is this OnDB and not on app? Because it's nothing to do with DB. This could be actually interesting for everything.
This is a really interesting point. So, well, first of all, it's called OnDB because we're focused on data. Well, first of all, because naming is hard. Second, because we are focused on databases. But you're not the first one. Not the first one telling me this. This could be a pattern for running everything, and you're 100% right. Still, our company focus is databases mm-hmm. and Postgres in particular. So this is what we're going to do. But this is very relevant because let me expand a little bit on this. This is the basics. This is the main building block, right? That we have reproduced with Kubernetes DAS at the node level. But what
Alvaro, just saying, you are a database company. But yes, if you do this right now with Quarkus as an orchestrator, native image, and you can control the containerds in the pods, you are not far away of having a complete cloud. So I mean,
yes.
if you what you can do now is you can deploy a small Quarkus Lambda like things, which talk to your databases, and you have your own cloud. I would say this would be a huge opportunity. I know you have to focus, but I mean you have everything in place.
Well, what you're talking about is actually done also already.
Oh man. We have to talk more often, you know. You are shipping faster than our podcast episode cadence.
Well, you know, in the last few months, we have hired a lot of interns in our company. They mm-hmm. surprisingly, they all have the same name, and they can work 24/7. So we're definitely mm-hmm. shipping much faster than before.
Is it Claude or OpenAI?
Yeah, we call our interns young Claude Van Damme, but you can guess.
Ah, okay, cool.
Yeah. So this component that actually ships next to the with containerd, we call it Sloney. Sloney comes from the mascot of Postgres called Slonik, which means a small elephant in Russian.
Didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, that's an official name of this Postgres mascot. And so the component that runs next to it, it's called Sloney, also following the same same thing. But Sloney is then, therefore, node local. So when we install OnDB onto a Linux box, which again is a curl pipe shell command, so it's just one command, then what it does is prepare it to running Postgres workloads on it. And then you can use the command line to create a Postgres workload. But this is a single node. how do we create a cluster across multiple nodes? Exactly what you were talking about. We need some orchestration. So what we did is that we have created another component called matriarch. The matriarch, you know, on an elephant herd, the eldest female elephant is the leader, and it's called the matriarch. Okay. So we have created another component, which is another Quarkus application, unsurprisingly, which is called matriarch. And matriarch, what it does is that it connects to all the Sloanies and helps manage them. We use a very interesting technique here, which is what we call a reverse gRPC tunnel. So it's based on gRPC, right? And it's reverse because it's not the matriarch who connects to the Sloanies to control them, but vice versa. It is the Sloanies that phone home to the matriarch, say, hey, I'm here. Then they open a bidirectional channel, and then matriarch can send commands, inverse commands. Once you open a bidirectional stream, it's just bidirectional, right? But what I mean is that first the Sloanie initiates the channel opening, and then most of the messages flow in the opposite direction. That's why we call it inverse. The advantage of this tunnel being inverse is twofold. On one hand, matriarch does not need to know about all the Sloanies it's managing. They can come up and go as you wish. Otherwise, we'll need some config file or some inventory of the IPs and how to connect to all of those entities. It's much better to do the opposite. The entities know about the central place, which controls them all, the matriarch. You can perform even SSL client certificate authentication if you want to. And then they get registered if they're properly authorized, obviously, to connect to this matriarch. The second reason is that this works even across NAT environments. If the matriarch runs in the cloud instead of your local environment, even if your Sloanies, if your nodes run on-prem, on your laptop, behind firewalls, behind NATs, behind everything, as long as they can do an outgoing HTTP connection, which essentially all the world can do, then you can connect to the matriarch, and then you have a bidirectional channel. So we can control them from the cloud. And this is actually what we're doing. We have a multi-tenant matriarch that will be provided as a service.
But you need a seat at the beginning, right? So the Sloanies have to know how to where the matriarch is starting, right? At the beginning. Mm-hmm. So this was always, you know, the case in such networks. I'm actually aware of Jekstar, JXTA.
Yes.
Yeah, this is also that also had seats,
you mentioned once. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So if it is not a problem, right? So you have a list of possible IP addresses where matriarch could work.
Well, actually,
right?
It's two things. So first of all, this matriarch we will provide as a service. Mm-hmm. Will also be provided as an open source component for anyone who wants to self-host. But we want to make this insultingly easy. That's our internal definition, right? So matriarch will provide as a service and will be the default URL. Otherwise, you can change the environment variable and then it will point to another matriarch if you want to self-host, for example. But by default, OnDB will point to the cloud-based matriarch. So you don't need to do anything. And actually, we have developed on top of this a web UI, a web console. So basically, you enter into the web console, and the experience is as it follows as of today. I assume you have nothing. You just have some empty Linux VMs, Ubuntu, whatever, just created, nothing installed on it, right? You go to the web console, you log in with your social credentials, whatever you want to log in there, and you have like an empty screen. And then it says, add nodes. And then the web console already gives you the option to copy and paste a curlpipe shell command, which contains a token. You copy and paste into your empty Linux VM, and in around 10 seconds, that's what it takes. It will download OnDB, install it, and connect to the cloud, to the matriarch. Then you see your nodes already in the cloud console. And then from there, you can create a Postgres cluster and say, create a Postgres cluster consisting of three nodes. You select where they're going to run, a node A, B, C. And it also takes, depends on the internet connection, but usually less than 10 seconds, you'll have your Postgres cluster up and running. And you will see both your resources, the nodes where you run the workloads, the Sloanies that I mentioned before, on your web console, as well as the Postgres clusters you are creating. So the experience is essentially two commands, or one command per node, and then one command or via the web console to create a Postgres cluster. And no Kubernetes required anywhere, but the same experience that the cloud vendors have offered with managed services. I would say even easier because they have become quite complicated, even to create a Postgres cluster. You need to go through a lot of steps. this is a much more streamlined experience. But essentially, that's it. And you can run anywhere. You can run on your own servers. Could be on cloud, could be on-prem, could be anywhere.
So you could have two offices with two Postgres and coordinate them via your cloud, right?
Exactly. It's a cloud control plane for self-hosted, fully automated Postgres running anywhere you want.
Mm-hmm. This is like the VPN solution. We already talked about that. It's the same principle where you can reach your servers. Tayscale, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like Tayscale for databases. For us. Yeah. It's pretty much the same. I just want to connect different computers and form a virtual network over WireGuard. But I want a cloud control plane that I don't need to worry about installing anything, managing anything. It just works. And yeah, very similar principles. We're heavily inspired by their user experience, not the technology or everything, but just the user experience. And works like this. So actually OnDB, at the end of the day, you have the web console, the cloud console, but you also have a command line. And the cool thing is that you can install the command line anywhere on your laptop and then manage your clusters anywhere where they are, even if they're on the other side of the world behind the nothing and firewalls and anything, because the CLI also connects to the cloud service and can see everything that you allowed it to see.
If I would have a JDBC connection, it would also go through the cloud service first, because I need the resolution as to know which database is up, right, if there's a cluster.
So this is a really, really interesting question. In the traditional world, let's say, even in the cloud managed services, mm-hmm. what you would have to do is run your JDBC connection, your JDBC driver, from a place where you can directly access your database. If your database mm-hmm. is running on Amazon Cloud, you'll need to set up an EC2 instance in the same VPC, right? And to be able to connect. Mm-hmm. That's still the case with OnDB. You can obviously do this because you can always do this, right? But thanks to our tunneling technology, we are able to also tunnel the Postgres protocol. So that you can run from anywhere in the world, even behind firewalls and NAT and whatever. We have a command which we call tunnel that actually ends up creates a local tunnel, and in your laptop or whenever you're running the CLI, and then you can connect from your laptop to your Postgres servers via JDBC as if they were local. Even mm-hmm. there could be in a totally different network in different parts of the world. This goes through our service. It's all tunneled and is end-to-end encrypted. We cannot see anything at all. Your client connects remotely to the Postgres directly. We just pass bytes that are fully encrypted. We don't see anything. And you connect as if it were local. So yes, we have also achieved this. This could be conceptually similar to what Cloudflare has done with their tunnels product and other equivalent solutions. But I've never seen something like anything like this in the Postgres world. It is the first time that you can control your whole fleet from anywhere where you are, sitting on a plane with the Starlink connection at cruising at 30,000 feet, your on-prem servers, your home lab Postgres, you can even connect via PSQL and run commands. So much that actually we have also added PSQL on the web console. It runs on WASM. So we compiled PSQL, which is written in C, to WASM, ran it on the web, and then it tunnels down to your servers.
Mm-hmm. Europeans will like your solution because you can run your Postgres database, wherever they like, office or not office, and they're still cloud-like. And this can also bridge clouds and on-premises as well, and could also help you to have multi-stage environment, right? I could have test productions with connection, because the data is always the problem, but it would be more transparent experience. But what about stateless? If I have something like Lambda, I have still the problem, right? That one connection is one Postgres connection. So this doesn't change where I'm going with it. You need another product, which you can build on top of that data API, right? So you could have one pod, additional pod, which running on your cloud, which offers not JDBC RESTful services. So you can have stateless connections, but this would be a completely different product, but you could offer this on top of that, right?
Yes. And we actually have to, you said two things before, right? One is that we could use this for all the things that are not only databases, and even the same cloud control concept plane, right? Could apply to non-Postgres workloads. But in reality, we're already doing this behind the scenes. For example, to support HA, if you create an HA cluster, We also deploy an etcd container co-located with Postgres because we need etcd because we use Patroni, unsurprisingly. Mm-hmm. And so Patroni requires some EDCS and we choose an etcd. So we deploy also transparently for you etcd container and it create an etcd cluster. You don't see it. It sits there. Mm-hmm. For taking backups, we also need to deploy other containers with backup technologies. So we're already deploying other workloads alongside our Postgres containers. And so if tomorrow we decide, yeah, let's supply something like, you know, Postgres, you know, which is a REST API on top of Postgres, for example, it would be just a matter of for us scaling another container. We all have the technology, the commands, we can send commands remotely. I'm not saying it's trivial, but, you know, it's absolutely doable. So yes, we can start layering things on top of this to add additional functionality for users.
Mm-hmm. And now imagine on your cloud, you have one Quarkus, let's call it API gateway, mm-hmm. It's always on. And if I go there, it could route to Quarkus, which goes away, starts and goes, you know, because Quarkus starts really fast.
Yes.
And then you have your serverless cloud.
Yes, we could do that to set up the tunnel. You connect to an always-on endpoint and then set up the tunnel and connect to your own server anywhere. Yeah.
Maybe and then you have a huge refactoring because you have renamed everything from OnDB to on run.
Yeah, naming is still hard, right?
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking because I like the concept, so how it works. And so you use the building blocks. And actually, Kubernetes wouldn't help at all here. Not at all.
No, not at all.
It wouldn't even work. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you could replace everything, but at the end of the day, it is easier just, you know, to... Right? I'm just because the entire networking distributed, so the reverse proxying and you could make it work maybe, but why? Right? This is the question.
Well, we have plans. So I mentioned that the component that runs on Linux that programs the containers via Containerd is called Sloney. We right now we have Sloney in Linux. We call it Sloney in Linux because it's a Sloney that runs on Linux. We are developing Sloney Kubernetes. And what Sloney Kubernetes does is a controller that you deploy to a Kubernetes cluster, talks to through our tunnels to our matriarch, right? But then instead of talking to Containerd to schedule a container, we'll talk to Kubernetes API to schedule a container. Conceptually, it's the same thing. API is different.
Yeah.
And therefore, we would unify under the same CLI, the same cloud console that we have, the ability to operate Postgres clusters in exactly the same fashion. But we will distinguish that the resource where you run them is either explicit nodes that you select from a list because you want to do it this way, or you say, oh, I have a pool of resources, which is a Kubernetes cluster created there. And then we unify under the same umbrella a deployment model for Postgres clusters, whether it runs on Kubernetes or mm-hmm. nodes, and it's your choice. Mm-hmm. We will even add clouds as a pool resource so that you don't even have to have the instances originally. Say, yeah, consider AWS as a pool for me. You have the rights to create EC2 instances on my behalf. Fine. Mm-hmm. Then mm-hmm. we'll create the instances on your behalf, mm-hmm. install mm-hmm. OnDB on them, which is actually trivial via the user data, and then connect to the cloud. And then you'll create a Postgres cluster. So it's a unifying model between, and you said very well, it's like your own Postgres cloud. This is our definition, is your own Postgres cloud. That's what OnDB is. But the difference now, you can run anywhere. You decide where your workloads run, on-prem, cloud, a mix of that, always under your control with the same level of conveniency that you get in a cloud-managed service.
But the female elephant on Matriarch on Kubernetes, it will the pool would be appear as one logical database or could be multiple databases on the Kubernetes cluster?
Multiple.
Or either way.
The pool for me is a resource. We call them resources, right? Right. So resources are either nodes where you install OnDB and Linux VMs or mm-hmm. a Kubernetes cluster or a cloud where you can mm-hmm. Create resources. You have permissions. The user gave you permissions to create resources from. And that's it. It says create resources. And then you create databases on top of resources. Postgres clusters on top of resources, as many as you want.
Mm-hmm. Yes, super cool. And what I do, maybe you are interested, has nothing to do with database, but it works perfectly well. I actually have already hundreds of automation scripts completely written in Java. So what I, instead of using shell scripts, I'm using Java 25 source mode.
Yes, and, yes, really cool.
And it looks like a shell script. So you don't even need the SH extension. It's just a file name without Java, without anything. You have the sharebang at the beginning.
Yep, yep.
And I have no colored output, everything actually, menus and whatever you like. And it actually, it gets more and more powerful because with Java, it's really easy to have asynchronous HTTP calls or whatever, which is way harder with Bash or whatever. And the potential is way higher than I thought. So yesterday it was an AHEX Live workshop and the attendees also like it. They were stunned actually what you can do with 30 lines of Java code. So because you have to know the instance main, there is no class, nothing, and you can have methods. And just saying, could be also interesting, you know, to use Java for installation purposes, because what I'm doing, I have there are lots of skills they ship with Python scripts,
and
the problem is, I don't know why, in my case it always tries to install Python, it installs Xcode, whatever, always triggers something, which is really annoying on my machine. And and I look at this and I migrated this to Java and it was shorter and no problems. Because the cool story is you only need Java 25. And Java 25 to install, it is crazy easy, you know. It is like double click or you just say unzip from command line. But it is way easier than Node.js or Python.
Oh yeah.
And then you can automate everything without external dependencies. And I actually underestimated how powerful this is, because I still had some shell script in, you know, my clients' pipelines and so forth, and I just did it for me, everything in Java. But now I'm thinking I will actually do it in real world projects as well, because there are no downsides. And I put the one repository is called Zeeds. If you go to my GitHub, you will find this is incomplete scripts. It's like Zark's argument parsing or menu. Uh-huh. Or a clipboard, stores clipboard to a file, which I use frequently, just starting points. And there are some more sophisticated. One is, for instance, ZWS. What it does is it is built in web server, which starts the browser, and I can implement web components. Uh-huh. And it works surprisingly well because Java ships with HTTP server built in.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And just telling you, think about this, because if you install something, it could be if it is easier to install Java first, Java 25, and then have the entire automation in Java. Just would be interesting, you know, think about this, because this is now my experience. I just use it everywhere. And I have a project, very new one, which could be interesting. It's called AI Rails. So what I do... I published skills for BCE, Quarkus, and for diagramming, for documentation as skills. And to install that, I also plan, I actually have locally a Java script, Java 25 script, and we'll also do this with that because it's so easy. And I think we'll push it more because the potential is huge. And if I show them to Java developers, they say, okay, strange. I show them the code, and it's very, very short. It's just with Java 25. It is beautiful, actually, and could be interesting for you. Just think about this, what it could do, because I would be really interested in your opinion, because you have a product and you have a Linux experience, whether there is something to it to use it for, you know, dependency-free installation.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I agree with you. I also underestimated this and saw it like, oh yeah, it's cool. You know, this is good for beginners and all that. But didn't see the opportunity as a scripting opportunity. Really cool. There's one area where I believe we could have use it. I'll explain you now. But let me highlight. There's a big problem with this approach. Let me be very clear on this. There's a big problem because this essentially becomes scripts, right? And they're written in Java. Mm-hmm. So you would naturally talk and say, this is a JavaScript and could be understood totally differently.
Yeah, we have to call it differently.
Yeah,
but
because otherwise people will think this is JavaScript and it's a
on
Java
the B script.
Space
on the B script.
Script. On the B script. There's one area. Well, obviously, I was joking. You can say JavaScript within space in between, but it's a bit long.
Yeah, this is what I do. Yeah. This is just my joke. I just call it that way. But I send you the link to the chat. So there are lots of they get more and more. And another thing is maybe it's already done, but is you could expose the Kubernetes Quarkus Stagres orchestrator as MCP.
Mm-hmm,
there's
yes.
almost nothing to do with a view annotations, and you are done basically. And
yes.
then expose it read only to whatever would like to listen. And I think with an agent you get cool insights, you know, what your cluster is doing and so forth, and you get additional UI, agentic UI.
Yes.
And as a UI, I don't know whether you are aware, there is a Goose. And Goose is agentic standard UI.
Uh-huh.
Which belongs to Linux Foundation, and it becomes the standard. It was donated by Block, and it looks nice. And you are a Linux guy, and
yes.
this is standard Linux Foundation, and you could use this to show how it works because it is already built in. You can have whatever models you like, local or not local. It looks like Claude Desktop or a ChatGPT desktop app or something like this. And it could be interesting to you because it's already part of Linux.
Yes, that sounds great. I'm going to definitely check it out.
Mm-hmm. And this was the MCP. And what I also doing is almost done. We'll publish it very soon. It is Postgres, but it's actually JDBC MCP, a very simplistic mm-hmm. Quarkus MCP server, which exposes Postgres database, the metadata, as via JDBC as MCP, because then I can use my skills to generate the JPE persistence layer automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of MCP servers, but I don't trust them because, you know, this is some binary code.
Yes.
There is nothing from Postgres, interestingly. There is no Postgres MCP, which I was stunned. There was one from Claude, but it's no more maintained. And I implemented it's like two classes, five methods, and it works beautifully. And I will do this and just queries, because updates are a little bit, you know, too dangerous.
Yep.
And I think this is also good practice to implement MCP by yourself, because you have to trust it. You know, if you pick something from the internet and LLM can, you know, discover some whatever, it is really dangerous.
Oh, yes. MCP servers can be dangerous. You cannot trust them blindly. So, this is kind of the approach of this NanoClaw, right? That kind of programs itself. In this case, you program it, but at least it's for you, and you know that it's, it's doing what you want and nothing else.
And I will maybe do this also, Graal VM image, that it can be started from the agent and it goes to Postgres and,
Incredible. Makes sense. Indeed.
And if you have already the Jean-Claude Van Damme in your team, you should absolutely try the skills from AI Rails, because what
they do,
no kidding, if you activate them, they create more or less code which I would write. This is I give you this
and
in the
really
chat.
That's really high-quality code already then.
there's almost no code. You know, I try to delete as much as possible, so there is actually no discussion. We say, okay, look, this is the minimalistic Java code. So, yeah. And
very nice.
Cool. Obviously, I will have to invite you back to talk about OnDB, if it works. And maybe after
Great
rename.
Pleasure.
Not OnDB, on run, or on app, on service.
The next step, right?
The next step, yeah.
There's obviously things coming after that in our roadmap for the, actually it was planned for the next year, but things are accelerating. It will be towards more of the second half of the year now. But there's plenty of plans afterwards. Let's keep it as this right now. But yes, there's more surprises coming down the road based on this architecture. You are absolutely right. We can do more things. Even much more.
Yeah, and I don't know what's in your case, but I have more and more idea and less time. This is some crazy times nowadays, right?
It is the main problem. It is the main problem.
And the podcast is really bad, because a discussion with you triggers five other ideas, which I would really like to implement. But I could do this, right? But my clients don't care that much sometimes about my scripts, for instance, right? So it's okay, it's nice, but we need actually this. Okay. Cool. Where people can find you, maybe OnDB, there is nothing, right? So you heard
OnDB is not public yet. It will be probably in April, mid-April. We're targeting this date. Let's hope that we'll make it. But if in the meantime anyone wants to start doing a private beta testing, more than happy. People can reach me out on Twitter, LinkedIn, starting from our website, ongress.com. And just ping me. I'm easy to find. If you look for Alvaro Hernandez,
Actually, Alvaro Hernandez or AHT, right?
So you AHT.es, that actually is my personal website. AHT. It is the easiest find. It's super easy. They're my LinkedIn, Twitter. Everything is LinkedIn. LinkedIn too. So if anyone wants to ping me and try this and give opinion, early feedback, more than welcome. I'll be glad to help with onboarding. And please reach out to me. AHT.es. That's a starting point.
Yeah. Thank you a lot. And see you next time.
Thank you very much. See you next time.